Welcome back to Word on the Hills with me, Felicity Sidnell-Reed, my co-host, Gwyn Shelterma, and our guest this week, author Vicky Delaney, also known as Eva Gates. So, Vicky, now you're working on so many different series. How do you balance all the things you write? Well, and what's next?
Well, balancing is not really something I have a lot of trouble with because I write one book at a time. I start one and I finish it. Mm-hmm. Edits may come in from other books from the publisher, and I have to stop what I'm working on to do that. But that's still sort of different, really, that I don't mix them up in my mind. So I don't have any trouble. And I think if I did, I might have trouble keeping the moods apart because one book is intended to be light, one is intended to be quite more serious. And, you know, you have to keep that mood straight in your book or you're going to end up with a little bit of a mess. So balancing them is not really a problem. Finding the time can sometimes be, but I tend to have a pretty strict schedule and I write on quite a disciplined schedule every single day. If I'm home and if I don't have company, I will write for 3 or 4 hours. So that keeps me on track.
Mm-hmm. So what is coming next?
I actually have a break of until November before I have another book out, and that will be the second year-round Christmas mystery by Vicky Delaney called We Wish You a Murderous Christmas. The first one was entitled Rest Ye Murdered Gentlemen, and the third one, which I finished, is Hark the Herald Angels Slay. So there's kind of a theme there. But anyway, so yeah, in November, We Wish You a Murderous Christmas will be out. I do have a new project that I'm quite excited about, and that is the Sherlock Holmes Bookstore and Emporium series for a New York publisher called Crooked Lane, which is fairly new, but they're getting started pretty fast, and they're doing really well. And it's about a woman who owns a bookstore all about all things Sherlock, and it's another cozy series. And the first book in that series is entitled Elementary, She Read, and it will be out sometime next spring. I don't have an exact date yet. Good. And then just to keep me busy, I also write novellas for adult literacy.
Yes.
The Ray Robertson series from Orca Books, and I have the next Orca book of which we can't think of a title. Or actually, this is sort of the longest I've ever gone without a title for a book, because the title I did have, they really liked it, but they have another book of their own. Titles can't be copyright, as you know. Lots of books have the same title, but they have another book with the same title, so we just can't use it.
So anyway,
it will be out next spring, and that's part of the Sergeant Ray Robertson novella series.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yes, those are interesting books. I read a couple.
Thank you.
Why are your new series set in the U.S. when, after all, you started with a series set in the Yukon and, of course, the very successful Molly Smith one in British Columbia?
That's right, and my standalones are set in Ontario, including More Than Sorrel, which is set in Prince Edward County, which is a standalone suspense. Essentially, it's because I now am with Penguin Random House, and big U.S. publishers don't want Canadian settings. It's sort of a cliche, but it's absolutely true that it's almost impossible to get a book, mystery book anyway, a crime book with a Canadian setting published by a U.S. publisher. Mm-hmm. One of the only books with a Canadian setting is actually the Constable Molly Smith series because they're published by Poison Pen in the U.S. But otherwise, it's very, very difficult. And if they do get published in the States, they don't do that well. So Americans like to read about American settings, you know, and it's one of the
big market, after all.
Well, and they're a big market, so we're not going to say no. Yes, and these are places that I can travel to easily and visit in order to write about them. It's one of the things that the Crime Writers of Canada that concerns us, but it's concerned us for 30 years and nothing seems to be changing. So Louise Penny has been the noticeable success. I can hear, even over the radio, all your readers saying, well, what about Louise Penny? Louise Penny's pretty much the exception that proves the rule. In fact, she's almost the only person who's really achieved real success with a Canadian setting.
Yes. Of course, I mean, you know, you've got a wonderful setting there in the Outer Banks.
Oh, yeah.
They are a great place.
That has been fun. And it's, you know, and actually I'm not complaining because I like being able to travel to these places and spend some time down there getting to know them.
So. Yeah. I'm very glad you haven't abandoned Molly. I have a soft spot for her family, and the people of that little town she lives in. And they're all such great characters. Tell us about the new book, Unreasonable Doubt, which was released recently.
Okay, Unreasonable Doubt is the eighth in the Constable Molly Smith series. It is a fairly standard police procedural style novel set in the small town of Trafalgar, British Columbia, which is really not at all a disguised version of the real town of Nelson, B.C. One of my daughters lives in Nelson, and I've spent a lot of time there, and I really, really like it. I like it a lot, and it's a great place to set a mystery series because it's a fairly small, isolated town that sees a lot of visitors. So a lot of different type of people live there. A lot of different types of people come through. And, of course, they all, in real life, as in fiction, bring their own problems with them.
Yep.
So it's a really interesting setting. It's about Molly Smith. When the series begins, the first book is called In the Shadow of the Glacier. She's a probationary constable. We're now up to book number 8, so she's certainly growing and changing. And one of the things I've enjoyed about this series that I don't see happening so much in the Cozy series is basically making this character older and wiser, and things change in her life. And, you know, by book 8, she's now engaged to somebody. And so I like that in that series. A series can be a little bit on the edgier side, meaning that it deals with fairly complex psychological problems or, you know, a lot of family issues. In the new book, Unreasonable Doubt, it's a man who has been sent to prison for 25 years for a murder he did not commit. And he comes back to Trafalgar, where he was living, after being found not guilty on appeal. And he comes back to Trafalgar because he has one question, and that question is why?
No. I hope he finds out why.
Well, you have to read the book to find out.
Well, I will. Yes. I will. How about reading us a passage from Unreasonable Doubt?
Okay, in this book, I'm going to start with page 1, chapter 1.
Okay.
Walter Desmond felt something move, something low in his belly that he might once have recognized as happiness. It had been many years since he'd known what happiness felt like. He gazed out the window of the bus, full of wonder. The mountains were so high, the slopes closing in on the highway, their ragged tops still white with snow, even though it was July. In the valleys, lakes and rivers sparkled blue in the sunlight. A shade of blue he had forgotten could exist. He'd forgotten the smell also, the rich scent of pine trees, leaf mulch, fresh water moving fast over rocks and boulders. Clean air, most of all. This bus, however, smelled of nothing other than too many people crowded too close together, a scent Walt knew only too well. When they had a rest stop in Hope and his fellow passengers streamed into Tim Hortons, Walt had simply stood there, stunned, breathing it all in. Hope was the name of the town. Hope. He'd take it as an omen because it had been a long time since Hope had been more than a word with a meaning he'd forgotten. The mountains around Hope were almost vertical, a wall of dark green and brown. He might come back to Hope someday, but for now those mountains were altogether too close. He'd been hemmed in long enough. He closed his eyes and let his nose and ears explore the land around him until it was time to clamber back onto the bus. As the bus traveled down the highway and morning passed into afternoon, he could see that in all too many places the tall pines were a strange shade of brownish purple, not the dark green he remembered. He'd read about the mountain pine beetle and the devastation the insects were bringing to this part of British Columbia as they killed every tree they encountered. He hadn't realized how widespread the damage was. He hadn't realized a lot of things. He'd read everything he could get his hands on and thought he'd be prepared when the day finally came. He wasn't. Nowhere near prepared. Everything was so strange. The bus had Wi-Fi. He knew what Wi-Fi was. He'd read about it when he'd been allowed to use the library computers, where he'd tried to keep up with everything that was happening in the world without him. He'd heard about phones people carried in their pockets and were far more than just telephones, and about worldwide instant communication. He'd also heard about civilians using those phones to film cops smashing heads in, or worse. The woman in the seat beside him had a phone like that. It was white, but the case was brown with dirt. She spent a lot of time typing with his thumbs. He'd found typing difficult enough to get his head, not to mention his fingers, around. Back in the day, he'd had a secretary who did that typing stuff. But he'd worked hard at it. He'd been determined to learn. When he'd last been part of the working world, secretaries were being phased out. He understood that he'd have to type for himself. He had. And now, was he going to have to learn to do it with his thumbs or the tips of his fingers? As a kid, he'd love those sci-fi shows and books where the astronaut, landing in some strange world that usually turned out to be Earth in past or future, struggled to understand what was going on. It wasn't fun, Walter Desmond knew. Not fun at all in real life. The woman put away her phone. She pulled a dog-eared paperback out of her bag. She was wearing too much perfume. As well as a lot of things, he'd forgotten the scent of cheap perfume. There had been nothing cheap about Louise. Not her clothes, her makeup, or her hair. And certainly not the perfume she wore. Subtle, enticing. He felt himself smiling. It was a strange sensation. He needed to get used to it. He'd taken Louise's hand as the lineup to get on the bus edged forward. "You're sure this is what you want to do?" she said in her deep, sexy voice. "It's what I have to do." "I might not approve, but I do understand." She'd advised him not to leave Vancouver. Not yet. Get accustomed to the modern world first. But he knew he had to do it. Now, while Walt still had his nerve. He took a deep breath and slowly, reluctantly released her. It was like letting go of a lifeline in a storm-tossed sea. From this point forward, he was on his own. "Thank you for everything." Her eyes were warm. A smile touched the edges of her lips. "We won't meet again, Walt." "I know." She turned and walked away, her heels clicking on the sticky floor. She pulled her iPhone out of her Michael Kors bag and began pushing buttons. She was talking as she walked through the doors, paying no attention to the people who'd stepped back to allow her to exit. He smiled at the memory. The moment she turned her back on him, she'd been thinking about her next case. Another poor schmuck waiting for her to save him. "Hey, buddy, haven't got all day here," a man behind him had called, and Walt had clambered onto the bus. The woman beside him, the one with the heavy hand on the perfume bottle, took his private smile as an invitation. "On vacation?" "What? Have you been in Vancouver on vacation?" "Oh, vacation, no." "I'm going to Trafalgar to visit my daughter. Would you like to see a picture?" Without waiting for an answer, she began rummaging through her cavernous purse to once again pull out her phone. "No," he said. He wished he could take back the word. He'd forgotten how to be polite. He shifted in his seat, stared out the window. The woman sniffed, but she took the hint and returned to her book. What else had he forgotten? Pretty much everything that made life worth living. How to be polite, how to make money, how to drive a car, how to talk to women. Other than Louise, and they'd certainly never engaged in small talk. He didn't know how to use one of those small, sleek phones that fit into a pocket or how to find a Wi-Fi connection. He couldn't begin to understand the menu in the coffee shop, and when he asked for a coffee, he didn't understand what the girl meant when she asked if he wanted Pike's Place. His wife, Arlene, had passed away, shattered, defeated, brokenhearted, 17 years ago. The day she died, he'd forgotten how to love. But there was no forgetting how to hate.
Thank you, Vicky. We've been talking with author Vicky Delaney, once described by the London Free Press as a one-woman crime wave and one of Canada's most prolific mystery writers. Find her and Eva Gates online at www.vickydelaney.com. Facebook, Vicky Delaney and Eva Gates, Eva Gates author. And Twitter at Vicky Delaney and at Eva Gates author. You can buy Vicky's books at any bookstore and, of course, online at Amazon and Indigo. And listeners, if you would like to connect with us with comments, queries, or suggestions for whom we might interview in future programs, please leave your comment at our website, www.wordonthehills.com. If you've missed a program or would like to listen to one again, you'll find all our broadcasts archived at the website too. You can listen to them anytime and from anywhere. Thanks for tuning in. We hope you'll join us for another program next week, right here on Word on the Hills, Sunday at 1 p.m. and Thursday at 1 a.m. on Northumberland 897, truly local radio.